Prabhupada's main concern was to finish and publish as soon as possible his translation and commentary of Bhagavad Gita. And one day something happened that enabled him to increase his work on the manuscript. Unexpectedly, a boy named Neil arrived. He was a student from Antioch College on a special work study program, and he had school approval to work one term within the ashram of the Swami Bhaktivedanta, which he had heard about through newspapers. Neil mentioned that he was a good typist, if that could be of any help to Swami. Prabhupada considered this to be Krishna's blessing. Immediately, he rented a dictaphone and began dictating tapes. Ayagriva donated his electric typewriter, and Neil set up his work area in Swami's front room and began typing 8 hours a day. This inspired Prabhupada and obliged him to produce more. He worked quickly, sometimes day and night, on his Bhagavad Gita as it is. He had founded ISKCON 5 months ago, yet in his classes he was still reading Bhagavad Gita translation of Dr. Ramakrishna. But when Bhagavad Gita as it is would at last be published, he told his disciples it would be of major importance for the Krishna consciousness movement. At last there would be a bona fide edition of the Gita. So, Srila Prabhupada, Satsurumaj, explains Prabhupada's concern actually was to produce all his wonderful books that he had. And Prabhupada knew the importance of the books. They would be, Prabhupada says, the basis of Krishna consciousness, the foundation of Krishna consciousness. Because the books contain everything. Prabhupada mentioned many times, whatever I need to tell you, whatever information you need for your spiritual advancement, spiritual practice, it's all in these books. So Prabhupada wanted to give this valuable gift to the world. And Prabhupada was translating in the early hours of the morning every day. And Prabhupada would be dictating and be these tapes, and Brahmananda Prabhu explained this specific incident that's mentioned here in the Lilamrita. They were, you know, the devotees that Prabhupada had recruited, they weren't really expert in, you know, translating, typing. They would do that service, but Prabhupada's tapes on the desk were slowly accumulating. This, you know, was a little discouraging to Prabhupada because he was translating faster than they could, you know, transcribe all his tapes. And on top of that, Prabhupada's accent was so difficult, you know, Indian accent. So it was like they had to like very attentively hear and then possibly replay and hear again, you know, before they could even get. You know, the typing done, and you can imagine if somebody doesn't know how to use a typewriter, you know, click, 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 looking for the next key, click, click. So it takes a few lady and problems, you know, getting a little concerned. And Brahmananda and them, you know, they were also feeling, you know, we can't really do the service effectively. And Prabhupada's tapes are accumulating. And all of a sudden, from nowhere, this student arrives, right at the Hare Krishna Assembly. So Brahmananda asked him, you know, he said he came to do 1 month service here, that's part of his school work. So they thought, oh, this is wonderful, you know, we should do this all over. All the students should come 1 month go to the Hare Krishna Temple and do 1 month service, free. So this was wonderful. So the Brahmananda asked him, what can you do? So he said, well, you know, anything, but, you know, specifically I can transcribe, I can type. So they thought, wow, this is amazing. This is exactly what we need. So they gave him all these tapes, gave him the typewriter, and in no time, he had to scribe, he worked 8 hours, sometimes day and night, in no time, those tapes were finished. So Prabhupada is very inspired that yes, someone that was translating fast, and Prabhupada started to translate. Somebody was transcribing faster, and Prabhupada started translating more. And then Prabhupada finished the translation. This Neil finished the transcription, transcribing all, you know, all the tapes. And then the work was finished, and then he left, never to be seen again. So we can see how, from one perspective, Krishna made the arrangements. Because naturally it's an important service, as it's described here, Prabhupada was using Dr. Ramakrishna's Bhagavad Gita, and that, you know, had a lot of impersonal connotations in it, translations. They weren't, you know, it wasn't bona fide. Although it was, you know, Prabhupada would use that. Prabhupada would read translation, few of the translations, and when Dr. Ramakrishna would translate it in an impersonal context, then Prabhupada would use it to smash him. Like Prabhupada quoted the famous the famous verse, Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja. So Dr. Ramakrishna, he writes, one should surrender unto me, unto the unborn within Krishna. And then he gives his purport. It's not that you have to surrender to Krishna. Ya Shishintai Gaurariki. It is not that you have to surrender to Krishna, but you should surrender to the unborn within Krishna. And then Prabhupada would, you know, challenge them. So what is the unborn within Krishna? Where does Krishna talk about unborn within him? Krishna says, surrender unto me. It's very straightforward. So Prabhupada wanted to give Bhagavad Gita as it is. And one lady, she asked Prabhupada, you know, which Bhagavad Gita should I read? And one, you know, that time Prabhupada started to cry. Because he couldn't tell her, you go read this Bhagavad Gita, because there wasn't a bona fide Bhagavad Gita. Every single Bhagavad Gita had some sort of, you know, motivation, some sort of concocted interpretation. There wasn't a bona fide, and there were hundreds of them. You know, hundreds of different commentaries that were there, but Prabhupada couldn't recommend a single bona fide Bhagavad Gita, that you read this one. So therefore Prabhupada felt the need that he, you know, must give Bhagavad Gita as it is. And now we see how Bhagavad Gita is such a wonderful and important book for Krishna consciousness. And for us it's so amazing. We don't need to, you know, go to someone and even hesitate whether it's a bona fide Bhagavad Gita or not. We can immediately tell someone, yeah, yes, the Bhagavad Gita, it's as it is, you read. So Prabhupada, you know, his particular words of as it is very, very important, because it is Bhagavad Gita as Krishna wants us to understand it. As the author, the speaker wants us to understand it. Okay, so therefore, we can see that was important. And because it was such an important service, Krishna made the arrangements. This was wonderful. In many instances, we see how Krishna would make the arrangements for Srila Prabhupada. Because Srila Prabhupada's service and life was to please his spiritual master, which was the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So naturally, wherever Krishna felt the need to try to reciprocate and facilitate Srila Prabhupada's preaching, then Lord Krishna did that. So many cases. Here we see one where Prabhupada needs someone very, very urgently to help translate, and Neil appears on the scene. We know Krishna intervened when Prabhupada was in the Jaladuta, and he experienced his third heart attack. And Krishna came, massaged his heart, and started to row, or started to pull the steamship. Made the sea calm, and safely landed Prabhupada in the Boston Harbor. Another time, Srila Prabhupada's rent was about, you know, $400, and they were struggling to pay the rent. because there was no, you know, it wasn't like they had a congregation, they could have debit orders, people give money, no. Prabhupada had to get donations back from those that were coming to him. So they were, you know, the 1 month they were struggling, and the devotees were wondering, how are we going to pay this month's salary? It's going to be very, very difficult. So then one devotee, the husband and wife, they were walking early in the morning from Mangalarti, and they were going to the storefront for Mangalarti early in the morning, so it must have been about 4:30. And as they're walking on the sidewalk, naturally everything was very quiet, they started to see some dollars fall to the ground. So they thought, oh, this is strange, money falling to the ground. So naturally money falling to the ground, you're not going to do anything besides pick them up. So then they started to pick these dollars up, and they totaled the dollars, and it came out to the exact rent money. If the rent money was like $420, then they picked up $420. So immediately they could understand, how did the money come there? Krishna made the arrangements. So like that, Krishna would make arrangements, either directly or indirectly. Krishna would facilitate Prabhupada's preaching mission. So we can also see in our own life, Prabhupada was totally dedicated, he was an instrument in the hands of Krishna. So when we also become instruments in the hands of Krishna, then Krishna will use us. Krishna will make all the arrangements. So we are now trying to become instruments. We have forsaken Krishna, we have left Krishna, we have denied Krishna in our life, in our existence. So therefore Krishna will not use us in his mission. Although on one hand he does use us, in his mission, because whether we serving Krishna favorably or we not serving Krishna favorably, Krishna is always using us in his own desire and pleasure. So those souls that are deviant, that are not serving Krishna favorably, they are still used as Krishna's instruments to manifest this material creation. And when we facilitate and give that desire to Krishna to make this material creation so that we can fulfill our material desires, then the creation is coming into existence, and part of the existence of this creation is also the manifestation of Goloka Vrindavan as Bhoma Vrindavan, as the Vrindavan in the earthly planet. So for Krishna, then Krishna makes that spiritual abode, and now he can come and perform his pastimes. So in that way, the living entities that are not serving Krishna favorably, they are also facilitating that pastime for Krishna to create this creation and then come yuga after yuga performing his pastimes. So they also manifest, because if there were no souls that were deviant, then everyone is in the spiritual world. Then there is no need for the material creation. So therefore Krishna doesn't appear. And the pastimes that Krishna performs in Bhoma Vrindavan are very special. Two main reasons why they are special is because in Bhoma Vrindavan, here in the material world, Krishna can actually kill demons. Krishna can fulfill the pastime or the desire to fight, the quality of chivalry. In the spiritual world, if Krishna says fight, nobody's going to fight. But in the material world, the demons are there, the devotees disguised undercover as demons, they can fight, like Jai and Vijay. So Krishna, that pastime of Krishna to fight is facilitated. And also Krishna performs childhood pastimes on the earthly planet, where he takes birth and then he grows, and then he becomes a 16-year youth. So those pastimes also here on the material planet, on the earth planet. and then the pastime of preaching. This doesn't happen in the spiritual world, but it does happen in the material world. Krishna comes and tries to preach Krishna consciousness as Lord Chaitanya, as Bhagavad Gita. So therefore the material world is a wonderful place, and Krishna uses all these instruments to fulfill his desires. But we would like to become favorable instruments in the hands of Krishna. And when we become favorable instruments in the hands of Krishna, then Krishna will make many, many wonderful things happen. When we become sincere, faithful instruments. Whatever Swamiji said or did, his disciples wanted to hear about it. This statement, there's so many pastimes. Prabhupada would write something, like a letter, or he would dictate something, or he would transcribe, and the devotees that were transcribing, for them it was like nectar, because you know, Prabhupada transcribing like nectar of devotion, and nobody in the world, has nectar of devotion. And I'm the first person to receive Prabhupada's transcription of nectar, translation of nectar devotion. So you could imagine, that devotee felt like, he's, so fortunate to be the first person to read. And then they would make copies, or they would distribute the copies, and they would start reading. They would be so eager to read, because it's a new book. And now, Prabhupada has given this wonderful book, and they want to know what's inside. So everybody would be reading very, very eagerly, trying to understand what Prabhupada has given them. So this mood was there in the early days. Whatever Prabhupada, said, whatever Prabhupada did, they would be curious to know what did Prabhupada do, what did he say. This was their mood. Gradually they had increased their faith and devotion to Swamiji, whom they accepted as God's representative. And they took his actions and words to be absolute. After one of the disciples had been alone with him, the others would gather around to find out every detail of what had happened. So they would, drill the devotee. What did Prabhupada say? What did he do? Where was he? How did he do this? What did he say? So this was, very special for devotees. They would try to share. So you can see how, because of their love and attachment to Prabhupada, they naturally wanted to know. And, they would ask, how did, Prabhupada, say, what was his impressions on his faith? And every single thing, whether Prabhupada smiled, Prabhupada's gestures, how did Prabhupada say, what did Prabhupada do, every single thing about Srila Prabhupada wasn't, material. The way Prabhupada would do things, like for example, let's say Prabhupada would ask for hot milk and bananas. So now naturally they would want to know, why does Prabhupada want hot milk and bananas? And then, they would ask the devotees or the servant who's serving Prabhupada, why did Prabhupada want hot milk and bananas? So he had to know. So he would ask Prabhupada, why hot milk and bananas? And then Prabhupada would say, and then Prabhupada would get the hot milk and bananas. And then they would ask Prabhupada, they would ask the servants, how did Prabhupada eat the hot milk and bananas? Now if you're going to give someone hot milk and bananas, you're not going to ask how did he eat hot milk and bananas. He had hot milk and bananas. What do you mean, how did he eat? No, but how did Prabhupada eat? Because Prabhupada was not an ordinary person. Prabhupada is a spiritual personality. He's coming from the spiritual world. So how he does things is very significant. So Prabhupada, he took the banana and then he peeled it with his mouth. So he peeled it off. And then he took the banana and took the cup, the circumference cup, and then he would cut the bananas with a cup. And then he would have the bananas with hot milk. And he wouldn't use his left hand. because generally a left hand is considered unclean. So generally you wouldn't use the left hand, but I ate the banana with one hand. Normally we have, you know, banana and we peel, and then we eat. But Prabhupada used. So like that, Prabhupada had, you know, so many, in so many ways Prabhupada would do certain things, and the devotees would be curious how Prabhupada would do it, what Prabhupada would do, etc. So every single detail they would want to know, and they would relish. They would be very happy to know Prabhupada did this, Prabhupada would do like this. So we'll be fortunate to, you know, have the seminar with Hari Sori Prabhu, who also was with Prabhupada for many years. And then he's obviously going to share all these pastimes, covering all different aspects, Prabhupada's prasad, you know, his prasadam pastimes, chastising pastimes, you know, so many, all the different areas of devotional service. Because when the servant is there with Prabhupada, I think it was Hari Sori Prabhu, Prabhupada told him that I want you to stay with me 24 hours a day. That was the order he received. So Hari Sori Prabhu said, you know, that was the order. Prabhupada said I should stay with him 24 hours a day. So that's what I did. I stayed with him 24 hours a day. The only time I couldn't stay with him was when I was sleeping. So that's the only time, you know, he didn't know what Prabhupada was doing because he's sleeping. But otherwise, practically, you know, you could say 18 to 20 hours he was with Prabhupada. And that's significant, because when you know, to know someone, you stay with them. So therefore, when you stay with Prabhupada, then you can actually understand who this person is. What does he do in whole life, right, every day? And therefore, the conclusion is that he's a living Bhagavan. He's a living Bhagavan. He lives the Bhagavan. Not only does he preach the Bhagavan, give the philosophy of the Bhagavan, but he's a person Bhagavan. He also lives the philosophy. Therefore, by associating with the Bhagavan and by associating with the person Bhagavan, you get the same result. Okay? And in this way, he received many, many instructions and lessons from Srila Prabhupada. And realization by associating. So these devotees, they would also want to know everything about Srila Prabhupada. Gradually they had increased their faith. Yes. After one of the disciples had been alone with him, they would gather around to find out every detail of what had happened. It was Krishna conscious. Jadurani was especially guileless in relating what Swamiji had said and done. One day Prabhupada had stepped on a keg that Jadurani had dropped on the floor. And although she knew it was a serious offense to a spiritual master, the major importance of the event seemed to be how Prabhupada had displayed his transcendental consciousness. He silently and emotionlessly reached down, pulled the deck from his foot without so much as a cry, and he silently and emotionally reached down and pulled the deck from his foot without so much as a cry. And once, when she was fixing a painting over his head behind the desk, she had accidentally stepped on his sitting mat. "Is that an offense?" she asked, and Swamiji had replied, "No, for service you could even stand on my head." So here we can see, just two pastimes. And in every pastime, in every interaction, Prabhupada taught something. And Prabhupada never did anything for no reason. Whatever Prabhupada would say, he would say because he wants to give a lesson, be instructive. Whatever Prabhupada did was an instruction, was a lesson. Therefore, Prabhupada is an acharya. An acharya is someone who teaches by example. He doesn't just speak, but he teaches by his own practical example. So here we can see Srila Prabhupada, you know, he did not explode because he, you know, tramped onto a pin or a tack. And then, you know, chastise who you know, did this, don't they know who I am? In so many ways, he didn't react like that. And this endeared the devotees to Prabhupada even more. The way Prabhupada would, you know, reciprocate with them, what Prabhupada would say to them, you know, how Prabhupada would do it. This just endeared, and they basically fell totally in love with Prabhupada. Completely. To the extent that they could do anything Prabhupada said. If Prabhupada said, give your life to me, they would give. This was the extent of their love for Srila Prabhupada. And here you can see how this also, at this point that you know, Charuvani stepped on the mat, and she asked Prabhupada, is it an offense? And Prabhupada said, no, for service you can even trample on me. Stand on my head. So the mood that Prabhupada was in, that I am a servant of Krishna also, and therefore I can be used in Krishna's service. And if I'm used in Krishna's service in whatever way, then that is perfection. Not that I am the guru, and therefore, you know, I can't do that. Servant, you know, servant of Krishna can do anything. It's like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Srimad, he was sitting on a Vyasasana and was talking around the same point. Therefore, service, the devotee can take up any service for Krishna. He can be a Kshatriya, he can be a Brahmana, he can be a Sudra, he can be a Vaishya, he can do any service for Krishna. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Srimad was talking like this, and he said, you know, for Krishna, a devotee can even do gardening. Because, you know, sannyasi, if somebody is a sannyasi, then a sannyasi, at that time, you know, they were sannyasis and they were a little proud, they were thinking, you know, we only preachers, we don't do, you know, menial service. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Srimad was speaking like this, trying to make a point. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Srimad was saying, it's like we have our garden. So who wants to take the spade and go do some gardening? So everybody was sitting there, nobody, you know, said anything. So then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Samad said, okay, then I will take the spade and go, see? Takes the spade and goes to the garden. So naturally when he does that, everybody else follows. But the point was, for devotee we can do any service. For Krishna, devotee will do any service. Just like we were reading this morning, Prabhupada made the point, all service is absolute. So according to our capacity, we should try to do the service sincerely, according to our propensity and proclivity, according to our capacity, we should do that service, and that service would be beneficial. Sometimes Brahmananda would say that Swamiji had told him something very intimate about Krishna consciousness in private. But when he would tell what Swamiji had said, someone else would recall the same thing was in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada had said that the spiritual master is present in his instruction and that he had tried to put everything into those three volumes of the Bhagavatam. The devotees were finding this to be true. Here we find that the relationship between the spiritual master and disciples is personal. So when Prabhupada would be speaking to a devotee, then it would be completely unique and different as when Prabhupada would be speaking to another devotee, and that devotee would find that also unique and personal. And Prabhupada would tell someone a certain instruction, a certain, you know, like here, specific pastime, some discussion that Brahmananda had, and he felt Prabhupada was, you know, specifically telling him. Even though it may have been somewhere else, but you know, Prabhupada is telling me that was very special for the devotees. So we can see, because Prabhupada is an extraordinary person, you know, even simple things that he does and say is not simple. It's extraordinary. If Prabhupada would say thank you, Prabhupada would say please, Prabhupada would, you know, just look, you know, it would be, you know, that reciprocation would mean mountains for that devotee. It would mean so much for the devotee. Okay, so this was unique, and even devotees found that even in classes. When Prabhupada would be speaking in Bhagavatam class, then Prabhupada, you know, would be speaking to a group of devotees, but each devotee felt that Prabhupada is specifically speaking to me about my problem. Prabhupada knows my problem, and Prabhupada is giving advice. How does Prabhupada know my problem. So amazing, Prabhupada is giving me specific advice. And every devotee feels the same. So this was the special power that the devotees, pure devotees have on a spiritual platform. They can speak to a group of audience at the same time, you know, the audience will feel that they actually speaking specifically to the individual themselves. Even in Krishna's pastime, it is there. When the gopis are dancing with Krishna, then each gopi is thinking only I'm with Krishna. We know, Parasvati Maharaj explained the pastime of Krishna with the cows. And even though there are so many cows, so many devotees, each one is coming and kissing Krishna, but each one is thinking only I'm Krishna, I'm with Krishna. So this is a unique feature of the spiritual platform. And here Sister Maharaj explained how that Prabhupada had mentioned that everything he wanted us to know he put in the first three volumes of the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, Prabhupada described that Prabhupada didn't know how long he would live. So therefore he put everything in the first canto of the Bhagavad Gita. You would see the first canto has so much, so many instructions, so much nectar is there in the first canto, because Prabhupada didn't know if he's going to complete, you know, go further than the first canto, so therefore he put everything in the first canto. And then when Prabhupada finished the first canto, then he went up to the second canto and he put everything in the second canto. So here it's described in the third canto, three volumes of the first canto actually it was. So in this way Prabhupada, as he, you know, went further and further, he would give more instructions, but everything is in the first canto, in the first two cantos at least. There were no secrets in Swamiji's family of devotees. Everyone knew that Umapati had left for a few days, disappointed with Swami's severe criticism of Buddhism, of Buddhists, but had come back, and in a heavy, sincere exchange with Prabhupada, he had decided to take Krishna consciousness again. And everyone knew that Satsarupa had resigned from his job, and that when he went to tell Swamiji about it, Swamiji had told him that he would not quit, but should go on earning money for Krishna and donating it to society. And this would be his best service. And everyone knew that Swamiji wanted Garga Muni to cut his hair. Swamiji called it Garga Muni's Shakespearean locks, but that he would not do so. So they were like a family, especially in the early days. It's very sweet. You can imagine, here's someone, you know, you can imagine, nobody met somebody like Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada was completely a unique personality. And we can get some sort of a glimpse, naturally, when we deal with Prabhupada's disciples, associated with Prabhupada's disciples, we can get some glimpse, some reflection of that. But naturally, you know, it's really difficult to really know what it meant for these devotees that were Prabhupada. Because they never experienced the love that Prabhupada showed them in their whole life, in the material world. Shrita Swami explains, you know, he was brought up in a, you know, family, you know, parents, you know, they were there, but he never received that love that he received from Prabhupada. So naturally when he received this love from Prabhupada, you know, he could immediately understand that this is not ordinary. I've got so many people around me, but nobody actually, you know, gave the type of love, the type of care, the type of concern, the type of protection. And here's some person, old man, who I don't even know, from another country, but the type of love and care and protection that he's giving is unreal. And everyone is looking for that protection, that care, that love. Everyone is looking for that. So Prabhupada was able to give that. and they were able, you know, they could experience this, and this naturally is what kept them alive, because they felt safe. They felt this person, he's not here to exploit me. This person, he can give his life to protecting me. They just felt this. Prabhupada didn't even need to even say that, they just felt it. And therefore, in reciprocation, they would do anything for Prabhupada. So the devotees, you know, they were like a family, and they knew the difficulties everyone was experiencing. And in this way, they would they actually, you know, grew up with Prabhupada. And in fact, as they were growing up with Prabhupada, they never thought Prabhupada would leave. And they thought Swamiji is here. They didn't know Swamiji's plan. And all of a sudden, one day Prabhupada decides, now I'm going back to India. It was a little blow for them. It was a little difficult. The year ended, and Prabhupada was still working on his manuscript of Bhagavad Gita, still lecturing in the morning from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evenings from Bhagavad Gita, and still talking on going to San Francisco. Then New Year's Eve came, and the devotees suggested that since this was a holiday, when people go out to celebrate, maybe they should hold a Krishna Conscious Festival, Rupanuga. So we had a big feast, and a lot of people came. Although it wasn't as crowded as the Sunday feast, we were all taking prasad, and Swamiji was sitting up on his dais, and he was also taking prasad. He was demanding that we eat lots of prasad. And then he was saying, chant, chant. We were eating and chanting Hare Krishna between bites. And he was insisting on more and more prasad. I was amazed. He stayed with us and kept insisting that we eat so much. He stayed until around 11 o'clock, and then he became drowsy, and the party was over. So in the early days, Prabhupada, you know, he encouraged the devotees to eat a lot, because this was one of the most effective means to purify them. Chanting and eating. The kirtans, the devotees described in the early days, the kirtans were also very, very sweet. And naturally very special. Because, you know, we definitely can understand the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in that environment. People that are, you know, completely, you know, debauchees, they, you know, have bad habits, they are sinful, you know, they have no proper culture. And now they're coming to a gathering and they're chanting. And then not only that, but they're chanting in association of Srila Prabhupada. And they will chant. They will go for hours. The same tune. They shouldn't, you know, be changing the tune. They should sing one tune, and they would go on and on and on. 1 hour, 2 hours. And you know, the devotees could feel the potency of the holy name. So this was very special. And then prasadam, you know, Prabhupada himself in the early days was cooking. So you're eating, you know, Prabhupada's pure devotees cooking. There's no ordinary. Very, very special, very extraordinary cooking. Pure consciousness. So Prabhupada's pure chanting, Prabhupada's pure cooking, prasadam, Prabhupada's pure association in his personal form, his lectures. There was a such a perfect scenario to transform the hearts of these souls. And sure enough, their hearts were being transformed so that they could become pure themselves and preach, continue the Krishna conscious movement. Morning after morning, the story of Sanatana Goswami unfolded from the pages of Swamiji's book, which only he had read and explained. Which only he could read and explain. Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana that he should be very grateful that Krishna had been merciful to him. To which Sanatana replied, "You may say that Krishna is very merciful, but I do not know who Krishna is. You have saved me." Lord Chaitanya had many devotees in Benares, and he sent Sanatana to the home of one of his friends who could get something to eat, where he could get something to eat, and take a bath, shave, and dress in new clothes. Sanatana, however, refused the new clothing, and he also refused to become dependent on one place for his meals. Now that he had entered the renounce order, he preferred to go begging his meals at different places each day. When Lord Chaitanya saw all this, he was pleased, but Sanatana sensed that his valuable blanket did not please the Lord, who said, "Now you are completely renounced. Your last attachment is gone by the mercy of Krishna." Sanatana submitted himself at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and said, "I have wasted my time in sense gratification. I am low born. I have low association. I have no qualification for spiritual life. I do not even know what is actually beneficial for me. Please say that I am, people say that I am learned, but I am fool number one. Because although people say I am learned, and although I accept it, still I do not know who I am." Sanatana presented himself as a blank slate, and he inquired from the Lord, "Who I am? Why am I in this material world? Why am I suffering?" Prabhupada emphasized this was the perfect way for a disciple to accept the spiritual master. So Prabhupada would quote this pastime very, very often. Sanatana Goswami approaching Lord Chaitanya and making this point that, you know, people say I'm very, very learned, but actually I'm a fool. I don't even know who I am. And then he would present, you know, this question: who I am? Why am I in the material world? Why am I suffering? So then Prabhupada would go and these are important questions for everyone to ask. Who are they? Why are they in the material world? And why are they suffering? What is their purpose? And this is a real disciple. So Prabhupada used the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in this way, try to expand and preach. After narrating the story of Sanatana's joining Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada began lecturing on Lord's teachings to Sanatana. Lord Chaitanya first explained that living entity is not the material body, but an eternal living soul within the body. Then for 2 months, Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana, revealing to him the deepest and the most sublime philosophical truths of Vedic wisdom. He enlightened Sanatana regarding the soul and its relationship with Krishna, the nature of the material world and spiritual world, the characteristics of a fully realized soul, and the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna, and his unlimited forms, expansion, incarnations, and divine pastimes. He explained the superiority of the path of bhakti yoga over the path of philosophical speculation and yogic mysticism. And he revealed to Sanatana the esoteric knowledge of spiritual ecstasy experienced by those souls who have achieved pure love of Krishna. These teachings of the Lord were like an ocean that overflooded the mind of Sanatana Goswami with its sweetness and grandeur. When Lord Chaitanya had finished instructing Sanatana, he gave Sanatana the benediction that all those sublime teachings would be fully manifested within his heart, thus establishing him to compose transcendental literature. For two months, Lord Chaitanya had instructed Sanatana Goswami, and for 2 months, starting in mid-November 1966, Srila Prabhupada narrated in over 50 lectures the Chaitanya Charitamrita's account of those teachings. Although each of his talks covered the subject matter of the verses, his lecture were never limited to his subject, nor were they prepared talks. So Prabhupada started this program, preaching Krishna consciousness, lecturing, basically repeating the message of Lord Chaitanya, given in Nectar of Devotion, because it's basically the teachings that Lord Chaitanya had given to Sanatana Goswami. And then Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami that now you write these teachings down and then give it to the world. So Deva Prabhupada then took that, it was Hari Bhakti Vilas, and Prabhupada took Hari Bhakti Vilas and gave us the summary study of Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is Nectar of Devotion. So this was the summary teachings of Lord Chaitanya, covering all the aspects of Krishna consciousness. Nothing left that, you know, we need to be There was everything that Lord Chaitanya had instructed about material world, spiritual world is there. There was nothing else we need. No. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is said to be the highest. There is nothing beyond that. The previous acharyas, like Sankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, they would come and they would give different parts of the philosophy. But Lord Chaitanya, and they didn't give the complete philosophy because they were paving the path for Lord Chaitanya to come and give the complete philosophy. So they were paving, giving different aspects, different parts of the philosophy, and then when Lord Chaitanya came, then he presented the complete philosophy, totality of Krishna consciousness, which includes every single aspect or teachings of the other acharyas and more. And this was the complete Achintya Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. And Prabhupada was now presenting these teachings to common folk, to common people. And now we have these teachings, and now we're giving these teachings to everybody else. So it is very, very special. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is very, very special. And the more we become Krishna conscious, the more we'll appreciate the unique feature and how special it is. Just like you can imagine, Brahma Samhita, one simple book, small book. Now, we may give someone the Brahma Samhita and they may take the book and they may try to go through it and much may happen. But when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got hold of the Brahma Samhita, he went into ecstasy. So naturally, you can understand that if Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received Brahma Samhita and went into ecstasy, then that Brahma Samhita is not an ordinary book. It must be very, very special. So all these books that Prabhupada has given us, they're very, very special. But when someone comes in contact with such a special book, they may not, immediately feel the power, the potency, and how special that book is. In some cases they may get a glimpse. But when they start to follow it, read that book, follow what's in that book, and become pure, then they'll be able to really appreciate. And that book will obviously become even better and better and better and better. It will give them great and great experiences. That's how special these books are. You can keep reading them again and again and again, and they'll keep giving you great and great experiences. So therefore very, very special. So this is how Prabhupada would, in the early days, he started preaching to these devotees, focusing on publishing his books, distributing his books, preaching from these books, and slowly expanding Krishna consciousness. And now we are trying to continue in our small way, in some way or other, trying to be part of this preaching mission by ourselves taking to the process, by ourselves applying the process sincerely, and trying to give Krishna consciousness to others. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions or comments?
Continue.
Yeah. He was sent, and then he continued. You know, even, you know, and that you see, you know, he may be a demigod, he may be somebody from the spiritual world, he may be connected to Prabhupada some way, in Krishna's sense. Oh, over 1,000.
Got drunk and dumped a football ball.
He may have gone back to Godhead. Yeah. So from our perspective, we may think, oh well, he didn't become a devotee, where's he gone? Yeah, you don't see, he's gone back to the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya had a puppy. Nima had a puppy when he was small, you know, and he brought the puppy home. And his mother, you know, didn't like the idea of, you know, having a puppy at home. You know. So when Nima was, you know, kept busy, she took the puppy and she put the puppy outside. So then Nima came back and looked for his puppy, and he saw his puppy is not there. He became very angry. And he started to cry, where's my puppy? Where's my puppy? I'm not doing anything to get my puppy. And the puppy even actually, you know, in separation from Lord Chaitanya, the puppy started to cry and lament and went into the city. And all of a sudden the puppy started to stand on its two lotus paws, with its other two lotus paws up like this, and chanted Hari Bol, Hari Bol. And a Vaikuntha aeroplane came and took the puppy back home. So now, you know, nobody knows where the puppy went. Puppy's gone back home. See? And we may say, but what happened to the dog? You know, where's the dog? We don't see the dog. You know, we had association of Chaitanya, where's the dog? Yeah, because it's gone back home. It's like that also. You know, these devotees, they come, they do extraordinary service, they meet a pure devotee and they may be missing. Doesn't mean they fell into Maya. Okay? In one next service, mission. Yeah. Alright. We'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki?
Yeah.
Yeah.